We have a great lineup for you this hour. Dana Durnford is back, and in the second half hour, joining Dana and I will be Richard Wilcox from Tokyo. So Dr. Wilcox is standing by, and we'll get to him a little bit later. The last time we talked to Dana Durnford, he was, and if you know, Dana suffered a diving accident, and he wears leg braces. You can call him a paraplegic if you want, but I call him a Superman by any stretch of the imagination. He is one of the most brave, unique people on the planet. He was all alone on a 21-foot Zodiac, that's a rubber boat with a top on it, in the wild winter weather offshore of wild British Columbia, doing his research, trying to find at low tide the ability to get near enough around the islands and so forth to see what the tide pools look like, to take photographs and samples of them. He has already established without any doubt more hard science than any publicly available scientist or government agency, either Canada or the U.S., I don't care whom, or anybody, than anyone could or has. He is a remarkable asset to all of us as a sentient species and a caring species. And he was, the last time we talked to him, also had gotten hit in the face and had suffered a serious shoulder injury of some kind. Now, I don't know what kind of a situation he's in right now. We're going to find out. Can you hear me, Dana? How are you?
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah. I'm finally in a hotel after 9 weeks on that little dinky. And that's a long time in anybody's books, I'm sure, but it's a hell of a long time when you're getting pounded through storm after storm after storm. We've never seen that like this on this coastline.
It's crazy. Todd, pull the phone away from you a little bit, Dana, a little bit further back.
Try that a little bit better.
Yeah, we're a little close there. Yeah, stay back from it. We had a good connection. You're nice and loud and clear.
Okay. I'm in a little tiny community. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say was, for those of you who have been with us following our Monday night Fukushima report, you know that Dana has been, I'm not exaggerating here, risking his life above and beyond the call of duty by a factor of 100 at least, out there to try to do things that the government probably is doing and is well aware of, but they'll never tell us. That's their game. They don't talk. We don't know. We don't have the God-given right to know. We're being pounded by radioactivity on land, on shore, in the air, in the rain, in the ocean mist along the coast, wherever you may live, there's something floating around in it. You can count on that. So thanks to citizen hero scientists like Dana Durnford, we have a clue. And his website, nuclearproctologist.com.
.org.
I never get that right. Sure, nuclearproctologist.org. One of the most unusual names for a website of activism I've ever heard. But it fits the bill. Now, you're in a hotel. Tell us what's happened to you since the last time we talked. You have 30 seconds.
I feel like I've been in a washing machine for 9 weeks, basically. I'm just pounded myself. You know, I keep getting the data. I hooked up with the dive fleet up there.
Yeah, pull that phone back. Pull that phone back.
I don't know if I can pull it back much more. I hooked up with the dive fleet on the north coast. They're heading over to the Queen Charlotte's in a few weeks.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll have some safety. They'll keep an eye on me. Make sure I get back into the anchorage each night, and I got somewhere to tie up to.
Uh-huh.
It's huge. That's a huge. We don't need to go over there, but we got to go over there anyway. But Turkey's entire coastline, it's way worse than Vancouver Island. Vancouver Island was totally annihilated, and it was just a handful of species. There's not even that up here.
Dana, there's less the further north you've gone. Less. There's virtually nothing.
Less. And on the west coast itself, right into the open ocean itself, less again. It's just shocking. The rocks are completely naked. It's like a river where the rocks are naked.
Yeah.
And There's a high tide zone for people that are not familiar with, where there's just amazing amounts of species. And then the low tide will have up to 9,600 that are recognized as residential critters on our coastline.
Good Lord.
All the institutions. And they're all, everything is completely missing. But the biggest thing, I think, for me was about a week ago, it really struck home how the mussels were completely gone. And I'm working on that angle right now. And I'm going to go in at some point and really flush this out a lot better down the road here. But for folks who don't understand it, every rock, interior and exterior of the coastline, should be covered in mussels. And I don't know why that evaded me the way it did up till now, but it really sunk home about a week ago. And I was going through the pictures trying to put up a synopsis, and it struck me like a rock that there's not a single mussel. I can't find a mussel. And at least down on it, I would find some little patches. And so what that turned into was I got into a bit of a debate with a few guys, and they said I was just another guy who learned how to suck money out of the government, and that's all I was up to.
And who said, who said that? Who said that?
No, that was just people who were naive and didn't know better and took one look at the operation and said, oh, yeah, you're just another guy who's sucking money. You won't do nothing. You won't say nothing.
All right.
And I said, for first off, and I don't know if I took it the right way, but for first off, I told him, I said, if you can go out there and find a patch of mussels, I'll sign the boat and all that equipment over to you. And that shut him up right on the spot. That really, truly put them in their place. And they just dropped their guard. And they said, really? I said, yeah, really. You go find a patch of mussels, and I'll pay for the gas. You go get your boat, and I'll go fill it up at the gas station for you right now. I'll meet you there. And I said, I'll chase you out there. You show me the spot, I'll verify it. The boat is yours and all the equipment on it. And, of course, they never took me up on that offer, but they listened to me. Because one of them said to me, you know, I ate mussels a few years ago. And I said, well, you won't eat mussels anymore, sir. I was very polite with them, but I was adamant with them, too, that they can't get out there and find a mussel if I can't find it. And, you know, I really, truly go the extra distance. If I can't find it, nobody's going to find that. And so I think I found my little window into each of these communities, because I think that resonates for everybody on this coastline. Because everybody who grew up on the coastline would have went out at some point and got mussels off the shoreline and eat them. Because that is a tradition on this entire coastline.
I see.
I'm sure every other coastline, certainly, where it's Mother Nature. And I think that really, truly is going to change the game in the coming week. But there is nothing left on the coastline. There's no flocks of birds anywhere. There's no insects.
None. No, all right. Now, how far north of Vancouver Island approximately are you, or were you at your furthest penetration toward Alaska?
I was 300 nautical miles north.
Okay.
I think 300.
And it's actually observably getting worse the further north you go.
And there's less population, less industry. In fact, no industry, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And just little tiny communities. The community is in now is about 30 or 40 people. And it's totally isolated. And everything is naked, this whole complete area. I ran down the coastline to get low tides, because up north, the low tides were now till the 15th in the dark, and so I couldn't get into those low tide zones and get any good data out of that or underwater footage.
Yeah.
And so, sure enough, I got daylight tides down here for that time frame, so I'll work down here for a week and a half, and like I say, 9 weeks on the boat, and I just couldn't afford to burn money on a hotel room. I just wouldn't do it under no circumstances. And it come to the point where I got no option. After 9 weeks, I couldn't even sleep last night. It's just so weird. I got a hotel room. It's got no hot water in the shower, so I got a cold shower last night in the winter time. That's ridiculous. But hey, that's what you get when you get into these little towns sometimes.
You had no hot water.
No hot water. Get in the shower and there's no. You can imagine after 9. Well, I get showers at the fuel docks along the way.
Yeah.
But when you get a hotel room, that's the point of it. You get a long, hot shower, two or three in a row, and no, got cold water. Which is okay. I survived.
Well, that makes for a very quick shower.
Yeah. That's another way of putting it, I just... But it's such a relief. I said, I better call Jeff up, because I know that you guys were trying to get hold of me, but there's no way to get hold of me when the weather breaks, because I'm down on the ocean. There's no cell phone coverage.
Yeah. Sure.
So I reached out to you guys just to let you know that I was finally in cell phone range.
Very good.
I was surprised to actually get a cell phone range down here. I'm in the middle of nowhere, but...
Hey, they're going to have the whole planet covered very soon. So,
yeah,
not to worry. That Google wants to deploy 80 satellites, something like that, to Wi-Fi the entire planet. Google, so you can go anywhere on the planet and be bathed in that wonderful radiation.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
but don't worry, you can hook up and get your text. Or sext message or whatever it is you want to get. So, yeah, all right. Now, how's your shoulder?
Shoulder is actually really good. Still, I know better than to use it, but it's not an agony. It took about 4 days for the agony to go away, and I learned not to use that arm at all. But it's, at least it's not paining and aggravating me. I can use my stick and get around a little tiny bit.
Oh, man. All right.
One arm bandit, got no legs, got one arm.
you're operating on one out of four motive power sources, my friend.
So I got to let that one heal up. And by the time that one heals up, the other one will give out. And it'll go back and forth like that forever, I'm sure.
Well, let's not go there.
Shoulders are healed up. My knees are really, really bad from the aluminum on the boat. Because I put the aluminum cabin on the boat, and I have to use my knees up to get the shocks all the time to brace myself. And so they're starting to give out on me. I'll come up with another solution for that one. At some point,
all right, are you headed home right now, my friend, or
no? No, I changed plans. I was pretty worn out when I was talking to you last time. I was pretty depressed. I was pretty beaten down with the weather, and I had gotten the daylight scared out of me so many times by so many big waves and big seas and that happened so many. I had become demoralized, but I regained my common sense and just finished the trip and get it done, and then I don't have to do it no more. That's the outlook I got now, is I'm going to finish the trip. I can't see myself stopping because I can't find anything, and so that frightens me every day. And then at nighttime I have to go through the data, and it just really it stresses me out, Jeff. I think because I understand the significance of what I'm looking at, and I don't have anybody to talk to, and I don't have anybody to discuss it with, and I don't have any outlet, to get rid of it. And so, like, being able to get on your radio show tonight is the first opportunity since last time I talked to you to get rid of some of that energy.
Well, I was trying to think in my mind in my mind's eye, of the North Pacific, from all the way across, from Japan to our west coast, and how the North Pacific Current comes across and splits off Washington, and, I don't know, what, a half of it, just for discussion's sake, goes north, the other half goes south down the west coast, and then loops back across past Hawaii all the way to Asia and comes back up and makes a circle. Now, the part that goes north goes up where you are and into the Gulf of Alaska, but it doesn't have anywhere to go, and it just concentrates. Am I right?
Yeah, that's fact.
So
no,
that's why there's
what's going on.
That's nothing. That's why there's nothing there. Now, what are the fishermen saying? Are they, what's their catch percent on the average? Are they fishing?
It's hard to find anybody. I mean, the weather is so bad. There's nobody really out there. And the ones that are out there, they're moving all the time, so you can't get a chance to talk to them. And I don't really see very many boats, period. It's very rare to see any boats.
Because of the weather. That makes perfect sense.
Fish are further up the food chain, too. But there would be a noticeable... Now, I do talk to some people, and they all tell me it's a disaster. It's another disaster.
Okay, now, this is interesting.
With a large number of fishermen.
Okay. You've talked to some, and they say it's a disaster. What do they say is a disaster, and do they know why it's a disaster? What do they say?
Right. They don't get it. They just say it's a bad year.
Ah, okay.
They're thinking about getting out of it, and it's just last couple of years is bad. But they, you know, I think what's going on is because it's really weird not to see anything out here, any boats out here working. You don't see, there's nothing out there, and that's really odd. All you see is the tugboats going up and down the coastline with the commercial construction.
Uh-huh.
But you're not really seeing any fishermen. You're not running into anybody, not even sports fishermen. You're not running into anybody out there. And once again, the weather is atrocious. It's just unbelievable seas, and you really don't expect to see many people out there. And a lot of times I am certainly the only person out there that I know of. In fact, I know when I was wrapped up at Dory Fleet a couple of different days, I was the only person out there. They didn't even go out there yet. I managed to go out. Because what I'm doing is different than what they're doing, but I was able to get out there and hide away. And they're targeting right now sea urchins. We talked about that a little bit last time, if I remember correctly.
Sure.
I guess sea urchins are fed up the food chain, but they tell me that they don't see the sea urchins eating kelp. And they know that is really bizarre, but they don't understand the radiation side of it. And I only had a little time with them. Now, when I go back up in about a week's time, week and a half's time, when I head back up north, I'll meet up with them again. And they're already acclimated a little bit to me now. Now they're starting to ask questions among themselves, I would imagine.
Uh-huh.
And so now when I go back, hopefully I'll get some real questions. And I'll give them some cameras is the plan, and let them take the cameras down and get some real different footage from the divers' perspective.
Very good. What did they say? Did they say anything at all about the population numbers of sea urchins on the bottom?
Yeah, I mean, they do. Yeah, they do. That's something I heard. They asked me, you know, a number of them have come up and talked to me out of the blue and said, do you think that the missing species out here has got something to do with the radiation? And I said, well, that's my opinion. Yes, I do believe it does. And others will come up and ask you, do you think the kelp that are missing got something to do with the radiation? And I say, yeah, that's probably what's going on in my opinion. And a number of them have come up and said, the starfish are missing because of the radiation, right? Not because of some disease. They say, that's a lie, right? And I say, yeah, that's my opinion, too. And so it looks like people are really...
Oh, they're catching on. It's catching on. Taking hold. And
now that they got the extra piece of the puzzle, which was the radiation, because they didn't understand that, but they did look into it. And the people that own this local area here... Just before dark, I was down, checked on the boat, and they gave me a ride in a little tiny golf cart to get there. So this place got no automobiles. But they gave me a ride back and had a quick chat with me. And they were like, oh, I knew it, when they realized what I was doing, and they asked me. And they were like, see, I knew there was something going on here. And I just couldn't put my finger around it. But he said, as soon as you opened your mouth and started talking, he said, I knew what I was thinking was right. So he knew in his own mind, he's been following it ever since it happened, and he's been seeing it, but he says there are people here when you try to talk to them, you can't talk to them because they don't see it, and some of them even say, so what? And he says, so it's really frustrating. He said, but he said, yourself, when you're able to have a conversation with you, said it actually resonates, and he didn't say those words, but you can tell that it all resonated with him. He got really excited because it actually made sense for him. He said, now I get it. Now I actually understand it, because that's the point of it. These people are isolated. No one talks to them, and they don't know what's going on, but why it's happening. But they feel it's probably the radiation from Fukushima. So it does seem like the majority of people are aware, yet some are not aware. But the majority seems to be aware. And the majority immediately, of course, accuses the government of lies and cover-up
uh-huh.
and manipulation.
Uh-huh.
And so that's encouraging to see. But once again, when it's blowing rain sideways, when it's gale force wind, storm after storm, not many people are having conversations, you know, or many people are chatting to strangers on the side of the road. So that's what I mean. It's not like a sunny day where people are chatty and want to have a chat. It's just horrible, unimaginable weather day after day. And I'm stuck on the boat by myself. People don't even know if I'm on the boat because they're not even there themselves. And so then I'm gone the minute the weather breaks. And when I say the weather breaks, is that it looks like it's going to come down, so I'll start plowing my way out and try to get 2 or 3 days in before it comes back up again. And so I'll head out even though it's still rough because I know it's coming down.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll take a beating out, and then when it gets rough, I'll take a beating on the way back if I
Jeez.
Can get back. And a lot of times I got to raft up in the island and tie on the trees and sit it out And I got some really bad stuff up here at the end of it before I moved down here, because I was working in the dark, right up till dark, and then I had to find my way back in the shelter in the dark each night, and it's a different anchor each night, so it's been a logistic nightmare. But of course, you know, the GPS and stuff like that, the radars and the sounders, that the technology we have today makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And if that goes down, though, I'm in trouble, I can tell you.
You tie up on some of these islands, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
now,
I planned to retreat.
Yeah. So you actually just float up along the edge, and I guess, do you get out? And
so I got a Zodiac on the roof, and I'll throw a little Zodiac in the water. I'll go up and I'll drop two anchors, and I'll steam backwards, and I'll drag them till they're really tight.
Jeez, Dana.
And then, yeah, and then I'll go ashore with the little Zodiac, and I'll put up two beach lines and on different trees in case one gives out on me from different angles. And then I'm pinned down for the night. And a lot of times I'll leave a Scotchman and a marker on that in the morning so I can come back at the end of the day and tie up to it again.
And there's no one on these islands. They're basically
anywhere to be seen, though. No lights to be seen for hundreds of more.
And they're beautiful islands.
Incredible. That's incredible country up there.
But now they're sitting in a dead ocean.
Indeed.
All right.
It's really good.
Hold on, Dana, if you would. We'll come right back in just a couple minutes. Okay, and welcome back. Talking to Dana Durnford. Dana, another question or two. It's winter. It's not the time you'd be out looking for insects and bugs. But this spring and early summer all along the B.C. coast is probably going to tell the tale for a lot of people. We'll stay on this. You'll stay on this. And it's a question of an entire die-off, not of one species, but of thousands of species, all interconnected, all interrelated, all dependent upon one another for life, liberty, and the pursuit of whatever it is thereafter. So they have fallen on, shall we say, hard times to the extent that, as Dana told us months and months ago, driving up the coast, he didn't have to clean his windshield. There were no bugs to speak of on the front end of the truck. None. This doesn't happen. What do you expect this summer then, Dana?
Yeah, that was quite a shock last year to see that. And the revelation itself was stunning and scary, to say the least. And so this year I'm ready for it. And in one sense, I'm going to really go after the data at all the gas stations.
Sure, that's a great idea. Perfect place to meet travelers, compare notes from all over the place.
Right. I mean, hit all those motorhomes with big, beautiful, shiny, wonderful-looking motorhomes that are perfect on the front.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what you should do, if you can, is take a video camera of some kind and just interview these people and just talk to them.
That's what I got to learn to do. I got to learn to do that. Of course, in bad weather, it's impossible. But in good weather, that's what I definitely want to focus on more for the documentaries. I need a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Right, different
concepts
with different communities. And so I'm willing to do that, but right now I'm really set up in the conditions and the weather and the environment just for the low tide zones. But like you say, that's a different scenario altogether, much more palatable for that kind of routine.
Yeah.
And I would love to encounter people. But the way I encounter people is so random now and so in between
I understand.
Get that opportunity. And
now,
I'm definitely planning on following that.
Okay. Let's go over to Tokyo right now and bring Dr. Richard Wilcox, Ph.D., on. Professor, are you there?
Hello, I'm here. Hello,
how are
Dana
you?
And Jeff.
Hi,
see
you. Say hello to Dana.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Dana. Nice to meet you for the first time. Great to meet you.
Thank you. Good stuff. Glad to hear you. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I got it. We're good. How's merry old Tokyo?
How's Tokyo?
Richard?
it's fine. I'm fine, and thanks for asking. And I was just listening to your fascinating, I don't know if Dana can hear me very well, but his fascinating descriptions of his, you know, of his diving experiences and of his research. So, and it's very interesting. So,
well, he's out alone on these islands, and he's tying up his his big boat, and then takes the little boat and goes in and ties it to a tree. And there's no one out there. There's how many islands are there, Dana?
26,000.
26,000 beautiful uninhabited islands up there. Can you imagine if they happen to be located down this way? I would have tried to buy one long ago. Get the hell away from everybody. Yeah. Peace and solitude, and that would be just wonderful.
And I was looking at the photographs. His nuclear proctologist, he has so many incredible photographs.
Yeah.
Could you ask him,
He can hear you, Richard. He can hear you fine.
Okay. Hey, Dana. Are those starfish deformed? Or I'm very ignorant about, you know, about biology of these.
The
pictures of the starfish. Is that evidence of deformation or what?
Okay, yeah. Go ahead, Dan. Answer.
Just about all the starfish that I see out of the water are deformed or dying or melted or petrified in one sense. None of them looks healthy.
Yeah.
And a lot of them might be deformed. Like heavily deformed and obviously deformities. I know that some of the bright color ones will show up really well with deformities, where you see like 16 legs on a 5-legged starfish.
You've seen that? 16 legs on
really
a 5?
Yeah, really stunning pictures too. Just incredible pictures of that stuff. But you're not seeing
because I'm looking at it's a top picture, January 10th, Spicer Island, and that one totally looked weird. I mean, that's like
that's
right out of a Schwarzenegger science fiction movie.
We're talking about, go visit, folks, please stop by. You can click on Dana's name on Rents, or just remember nuclearproctologist.org, and all the pictures are there. All right, Richard, your next question or comment.
Well, and I was just relating, I mean, if these are genetic deformities from the radiation, then we know already from the research from Tim Mousseau, who did extensive research in Chernobyl, and then now in Fukushima Prefecture, he's done research in the terrestrial, on land, of insects and those life forms, and so that's been documented in the scientific literature already that because they generate so rapidly, the deformations in the genetic.
Yeah, but we're talking, Richard, about a complete absence of insects, which was apparent last year, last summer. And this next summer...
I know.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I know. It's horrible. It's unbelievable. The whole story is just incredible.
And
you learn about a new die-off of some species or another in the Pacific Ocean, and there's something going on here.
Well, that's what the scientists say. There's something going on here, but we don't know what it is. excuses are getting to be ridiculous.
I just wrote a paper, which is going to keep James busy. It's about 10 pages, but it deals with... the nuclear apologists, Kai Vetter and Jay Cullen, and I mentioned Dana's work,
awesome.
I'm just kind of interested what your opinion of, everybody will be able to read my paper in a while. But,
we'll have it up tonight on the site.
Sure.
Jay Cullen fellow, he seems to be a covering up for the cause.
Well, he came out of nowhere, didn't he?
He's a marine chemist at the University of Victoria in British Columbia on Vancouver Island. He got a $630,000 hush fund to go around to the communities and give them a presentation about radiation, that it was benign and innocuous, like potato chips and bananas, walking in sunshine routine. And so obviously he's way down the rabbit hole, and he's been confronted a few times, and he's always claimed that information is misleading and it's not true that he's presented with. I can't Photoshop 1,000 pictures a day and stuff like that. And why would I anyway, when I get a GPS, anybody can go back and then discredit me? Why would I do something like that? And, but
he says that you Photoshop all these photos on your...
That's what he allegedly said, and those emails were forwarded to me. He said this in exchanges. But he's also, every time someone brings up any other kind of information about radiation in North America, now, I mean, Canada, there's a headline, a famous headline of Canada, Health Canada says 300 times iodine compared to the background radiation is minute. It was minuscule, was insignificant. And as you know, for the iodine 131, and 300 times it, this is a man-made against bananas. This is what the comparison was. But it just goes to show how much actually showed up here. There had to be 10 times more iodine 132. There had to be 30 times more iodine 133. And there was 31 times more iodine 129 at a 15 million year half-life that was ionized and radiated to the chain reaction that also had to show up at the same time, because that's how it worked. And so Jay Collin will keep referring to iodine 131 with an 8-day half-life. And so people just become complacent.
An eight-day half-life.
Yeah. Yeah, but he doesn't mention 132 or the 133.
Yeah, there are over 200, at least 200 radionuclides that we should be concerned about that no one ever talks about.
Right.
Well, recently in Japan, even a Japanese-run scientific study pointed out that that the measuring mechanism of the government is underestimating or not even measuring the strontium in Japanese content of food, whereas cesium is tracked, but strontium is being underestimated, and so it must be much worse in the ocean, where it's much more difficult to measure.
Right. They sprayed salt water on those reactors, and the salt water created the sulfur hydrogen peroxide buckyballs, and that was able to ingest the atoms with the isotopes and become like little nuclear engines. They're not solubile in water. And so a lot of that strontium was picked up through that venue, that vector. And when that's transported across, it's very easy to transport that stuff because it's so tiny. It's much smaller than the pollution that comes across from Asia all the time. Mm-hmm. And so it comes through the same venue. That stuff, you know, it's harder to recognize it because it's in those buckyballs. And so it's hard to recognize the buckyball. I don't even know if we got the technology. But there was 1,500 of these sulfur buckyballs per cubic meter of air in California in March and April by UC Berkeley, I think it was, identified that 1,500 atoms, radioactive atoms from Fukushima in a cubic meter of air. And so people were breathing these hot particles, these hot fuel fleas each day. And so we're really going to see the damage show up from that. Dr. Ray McGill made from Loveless Respiratory Research Institute, and all they done was took beagle puppies and dogs and fed them plutonium and americium 241 for 35 years, and they showed that even the smallest amount with animals would get cancer in 3-4 years. About 70% of them would die from it. So we expect to see that die off now over the next year and 2 years really show up in the mammal and the human population. All the other populations seems to be died or gone.
Yeah.
And that's really stunning to see. You know, there is 9,600 recognized species that are residential to the coastline in the tidal pools themselves, and I can't find them anywhere on this entire coastline since August of last year, and that's why the trip has never stopped, just because of, to me, there's no more urgency imaginable than trying to bring a conclusion to what the damage really was and to verify for everybody with the actual documentation. And so that's why it was taking so much time, energy, and effort and monetary. But that'll be done in a few months. And then what? Hopefully, you know, people like yourself who are so articulate. I read a lot of your stuff, by the way, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I know how much work you put into your material and how many people covered that. And so that's huge to have someone like yourself on our side that is actually really, truly going down that rabbit hole and is able to sort it out to people properly the way you do it. That's huge.
Yeah, Richard has made a very big contribution to our knowledge base. We're coming up on 4 years, and cancer is going to most probably begin to project into the media one way or the other. They'll try and dodge it for as long as they can. And they'll get away with it for a few years, but 4, 5, 6, 7 years, you're going to start seeing people with compromised or weak immunological systems beginning to get sick from cancer. We all get cancer, but our immune systems can take care of it in most cases. And things are tragically going to get bad for children. This is really a crime. It's a crime of immeasurable proportion.
The native communities there, Jeff, are ravaged with cancer. They're ravaged.
Right now.
Just every time I hear someone talk about the native communities, they talk about cancer, it's going to just start again. And that's what they always say too. It's again. Again. You know, cancer again. Brutal cancers over and over and over. And just weird cancers and bizarre cancers that you've never heard of before.
Huh.
And blood cancers, leukemias, and just a lot of it. Showing up.
You know, and I've seen pictures from Japan, Richard, of these farmers holding up these grotesquely deformed common vegetables and laughing about it. Like, isn't that funny? Ha, ha, ha. They're laughing at their own demise is what they're laughing at.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of those recently, but right, for quite a long time, there was a lot of those photographs. Like Fukushima Diary especially was... and it's been a while. So that's one reason I asked Dana about those starfish. But, as far as cancers, in the paper I just quoted, actually Yoichi is the one that put me onto this quote, this information, but the International Physicians for Prevention of Nuclear War estimated that 430,000 cancer deaths by the year 2000 would have occurred due to the A-bomb tests, you know. And so now we have Fukushima mixed in with all that. So, it's just incredible. And this is a huge cover-up, of course. I mean, there's no acknowledgement in the mainstream media about a group like an independent group, independent from the United Nations, these physicians. That's not a small number. And, of course, there's other estimates that are much, much higher than 400,000, but it's just, I mean, you throw Fukushima into the mix and it's just worse. It's a nightmare.
Dana, what's your plan then for the next, I guess you're going to go out another month on this?
Yes, I'm going to do a couple of weeks right here, and then because I came 200 nautical miles down the coastline over the last 2 days to catch the tide. Because it's dark up on the other end. But then I'll head back up into the Queen Charlotte Islands. That's the COVID. That's the biggest hit we can do is the Queen Charlotte Islands. And that's around 350 kilometers long. I'll do both sides of it. I'll be running with the commercial dive fleet at the same time. And the idea is once we do all of that, it's okay to head back down after that. But that's I'm not going to go anywhere until I get to Charlotte and done. But then in the spring, I want to head out to the Northwest Territory and do the Beaufort and the Baltic Sea, the Northwest Passage, and see how much of that stuff is coming down our back door and surrounding this continent. And that has to be done, in my opinion, in order to get that whole picture. And I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can. I'm pretty worn out. By the time I get home, I don't know if I ever want to move again out of the house. But I would imagine there's nothing going to stop me. Tell you the truth, because I can't imagine stopping. And
it's,
so much energy and time went into putting this together.
Go ahead,
Where are the other researchers to help? Where are the other research to help Dana? This is incredible. I mean, where's National Geographic or
other scientists?
There's one guy doing all this work?
That's right.
There's one guy doing all this?
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They're all tied up to the government. They're tied up to a corporation. They're tied. They're part of the matrix. So it's not going to happen. They can't step out of line, see, or the roof will come down on their heads.
That's right. Yeah.
So we're not expecting that until it gets to the point where there's nothing left along the West Coast. Nobody catches any fish. No seals. No sea lions. The whales, if there are, there'll be a few. Remember, there are no baby orcas left. They've all died at 1 year or less since 3/11. They're at the top of the food chain. They're eating the most radioactive fish, and they're gone. So that's it. That's it. We'll find out eventually when the cancer rates in our species start to go through the roof. What's going on in Japan? You know, you've got cancer there, but sure. Is it being hushed up? Or are they talking about it at all?
Yeah, well, you know, the newspapers aren't really publishing much about the nuclear issue anymore.
They're afraid because of the law.
Yeah, and they're controlled. And, I mean, the Asahi Shimbun, one of my students actually gave a very good presentation. I must be a good teacher. But it was about a comparison between Minamata disease, which happened in the 1950s, in Fukushima. They compared those. And it's the same bloody thing. It was a big cover-up. They poured, Chiso Corporation poured mercury right into the ocean, and the disease is spread among people and animals. And it was years and years before anybody would acknowledge the cause of that. And the Asahi Shimbun was one of the papers that was part of the cover-up. And, I mean, the Asahi Shimbun is one of the better papers, actually. And I think it's the same this time. It's very hard to get, you know, systematic analysis or good information about the cancer rates in Fukushima or elsewhere. And when they do publish that kind of information, it's, you know, they go by the UN, UNSCEAR. They just kind of quote them and say, well, everything's okay, and this number of thyroid abnormalities in children is normal and everything, but when it's not at all. So we have to sort through the little information that leaks out. You have to. There was somebody on ENE News, a woman who spoke at a conference that's on YouTube, and she had a lot of interesting things to say about the rising cancer rate. And what I found really interesting was the attitude of the people that she knows. She's a Japanese woman, and she said, it's just what my own experience is about the way people are in denial, and you're not supposed to break the harmony of happy people's happy attitudes and talk about such depressing things as cancer or anything.
Oh, yeah.
That goes against
let's celebrate. Let's celebrate and encourage denial and ignorance. That's all.
That's
really wonderful.
And she expressed it. I thought exactly. I see that all the time, and it's so frustrating.
It is.
Her relatives would, you know, kind of get angry with her if she spoke about
those issues. Richard, you have a wife and family, a Japanese wife, and you have family, children.
Yeah.
If you didn't, I'm assuming you would have resigned and gotten out of there.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, when the accident happened, I did suggest we'd leave, and but my wife is a very stubborn person and didn't want to leave. And I was terrified for the first, you know, few weeks of that, of the ongoing. And then that's one of the things that provoked me to write about the topic, to learn more about it.
Right.
And as I learned more about it, I got a little bit of handle on it. But where we live, we're just a little bit outside the danger zone, really. But, you know, we've talked about this before. It's bioaccumulation through water and food that's the thing that worries us. So I do
we're just about out of time here.
Yeah.
You've sent the paper over. We'll have it up loaded in the night news batch. It'll be in the top Fukushima section. What's the title of it?
It's called Captured Opposition Defends Nuclear Poisoning.
Very good. Good title. Okay.
Richard, that's a good title.
It's an excellent title. Thank you so much again for everything, capital E. We'll talk to you soon, and your contributions, again, extraordinary, because we just don't get the news out of Japan at all unless it's from you. There's no one else, so you're it.
That's right.
Thank you,
okay,
my friend.
I'm it, and thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Dana, and I hope to talk to you again soon, Dana.
Take
care.
You too. Anytime at all. You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
All righty.
Bye-bye, guys.
Good night, Richard. Dana, you've worked your way down the coast a couple hundred nautical miles. You're going to do what? Then just hang out in the island, try and do as many islands as you can?
I'm going to go out and do all the leading islands that lead to the inside. So all the flow of water that has to come in inside has to go through a group of islands.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll always try to hit those first.
Very good. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for being available tonight, Dana. Take care of yourself. A lot of people are thinking about you.
You know, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Take care, folks.
Good night.